It was 50 years ago that the open housing marches began in Milwaukee. For 200 nights, civil rights activists marched from the city's predominantly black north side over the 16th Street Bridge to the white south side. They demanded a law to end discriminatory housing practices that prevented African Americans from living in white areas of the city. A teenager named Prentice McKinney was at the center of those marches, leading the NAACP Youth Commandos. WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Aisha Turner sat down with McKinney to learn about the fight for civil rights here in Milwaukee and how that reverberated across the nation. Please note, this piece contains language that some people may find offensive.
So how many questions have you got?
It's about 1:15 on a Tuesday afternoon. It's clear that I've interrupted Prentice McKinney's day. He usually doesn't wake up until noon, so it's still early.
We run a bar. We're up 5-6 o'clock in the morning.
A cup of coffee sits on the glass desk in his living room. Prentice owns the night spot downstairs, Savoy's, off of Locust Street. This afternoon, he's getting ready for his Tuesday night wing special. He taught himself to DJ 5 years ago. He's practicing when I show up. It's my
command. So I'm just sorting a music flow that I want to play today.
He points to a gray chair next to his and offers me a seat.
I smoke, so put your lungs at risk if you'd like.
Before Prentice bought Savoy's 20 years ago, it was called Turan's.
And this is where everybody came to get together after the marches. I think I was 18, 19 when I first came in here. I don't think I was supposed to be in here, but that's beside the point.
It was the spot for conversation and laid-back music.
Chill for a moment, and then somebody says, oh, I got an idea, and here we go again.
Prentice is almost 70 now.
I'm still young. Still had 20 years in front of me. I'm still kicking.
He says that energy, the same energy he drew on as a 19-year-old member of the NAACP Youth Council, actually comes from his anger.
Too often we look at the issue of anger and say, anger means we will destroy something. Anger also affords us an opportunity and an energy level to build something.
Prentice has built a life and a legacy of civil rights work, focused on confronting the injustice he's seen for African Americans. During the open housing marches in particular, he was a youth leader with the NAACP Commandos. Commandos march with activists to protect them against crowds of violent white counter-demonstrators and hostile police officers. It was a natural outlet for Prentice, who felt the lash of racism stir his anger at an early age.
I had two brothers that were in service. The one who was in the Air Force had been in Europe for a while, decided he was coming back to Milwaukee to buy the family a home. He was in uniform. Him, I, and my mother get in a car, and they've got a couple spots picked out to look at properties. So one is up here on 24th and Capitol. He drove up, saw the for sale sign. We all get out of the car, nice neighborhood, whatever. And at that point, I'm young. I didn't know that they didn't sell houses to African Americans in certain neighborhoods. So we walk up on the porch. He knocks on a door. White lady comes, said, see, you have a sign for house for sale. We'd like to take a look at the house. She looked at him. Oh, gosh, no. I could never sell to niggers.
That didn't fly with him.
You don't call my mama no nigger. My brother dragged me off the porch, and that's when I became aware of my anger at being treated differently. Just simply looking at your skin and saying, no, you're not good enough for this.
He was about 15, maybe 16 years old. He noticed how differently his mom reacted. His parents had grown up as sharecroppers in a small town in Arkansas.
Seen or heard about people getting lynched, KKK coming down to people's houses in the middle of the night. I mean, so her experience with white people had taught her to be afraid. You know, you do what masters say do. So I didn't have that inherent fear that someone would do something to me because I stood up for myself. And so when I got involved in civil rights, that was her greatest fear. She went and took out a life insurance policy on me. She feared that deeply that they would kill me.
For Prentice, his manifestation of anger in place of fear would pay off. A young white priest named Father James Groppi showed him how to channel his anger early on.
We met at a fight. They moved the Freedom House in on 15th and Valete, And me and my little crew were on 14th and Bleak.
The Freedom House was a gathering place for the NAACP Youth Council and its Commando Defense Unit. It was established in 1966.
And so when they moved into the house, it was our hood. We had to go check them out. In the process of checking them out, I had a little gang called Quick Fist and the Retouchables. Of course, I was Quick Fist. So we went around looking out for our territory. And I ran into Dwight Benning. Dwight was probably 6'3", probably 250 pounds. Bass in his voice. So we had a few words, and next thing you know, we're ready to knuckle up, you know? And Groppi pulled up.
Father Groppi was an advisor for the Youth Council.
Down to earth, average, cool kind of person. He persuaded me that maybe we could work together to make our community a better place. And so I ended up joining up.
Together, they marched for better education, to pick up the all-white Eagles Club, and eventually, on August 28, 1967, for housing. Vail Phillips was the first African-American woman to serve on Milwaukee's Common Council. She spent years pushing the city government to outlaw housing discrimination. She first introduced a bill in 1962. It was defeated 18-1. She tried three more times. Each time the bill failed. So in 1967, she teamed up with the NAACP Youth Council. They needed to make people pay attention. The Youth Council and its supporters marched along the 16th Street Bridge. An old joke claims it's the longest bridge in the world because it connects Africa to Poland. Marchers made their way from the city's predominantly black north side to its white south side. The marching would go on for 200 days. Vail Phillips told the Common Council they were out of excuses.
That nobody is free until everybody is free, and we intend to march, all of us, until we get just some of the basic freedoms that are ours. If ever a matter demanded the urgent attention and forthright action of this Common Council, this is it. Gentlemen, the time is now. Thank you.
When the fair housing marches began 50 years ago, Prentice McKinney had no idea how long they would last.
We didn't start out marching saying, okay, if we march 200 days, we're going to accomplish something. No, it was we're marching today. And you get out there and, well, for me, they piss you off even more and you say, I'm coming back.
On the first night, the marchers were met with a hostile crowd. Thousands of people on the south side shouted obscenities and threw rocks and bottles at the demonstrators. On the second night, the same thing. And on that second night, when marchers returned to the north side, they discovered the Freedom House on fire. The Youth Council held a rally in the front yard the next day. A young, pissed-off Prentice McKinney took several deep drags of his cigarette while journalists gathered around him.
The fire was premeditated in my mind. It was premeditated, deliberately set by the police force.
The police department was accused of treating black people unfairly for years.
Because these cops walking around here with guns, man, got as much sense as a orangutan with a balloon.
Why would a policeman want to do that?
Well, first of all, man, why they wanted to do that, they don't like us down there. And they figure that this is one of the ways of moving us out. But one house don't stop, no show.
During the marches, Prentice received a letter. In the backdrop of the civil rights movement was the Vietnam War. Prentice was 19 years old, registered for the draft.
I had to make a decision. Muhammad Ali said, Vietnamese ain't never called me no nigga, so I ain't got no problems with them. I got problems with the ones calling me nigga, okay? Well, I felt very much the same way. No, I'd rather go to jail. Over there, I'd probably have to kill somebody or get killed. This country wasn't worth that for me.
He was eventually reclassified. His fight was here, not in Vietnam. The movement grew. Supporters joined the cause. Half a year later, in the spring of 1968, the streets were full.
It's amazing the power of television. People started seeing it in the news, the local news at first, and then you'd see the numbers starting to build up. Well, when the national news came in, CBS and ABC, well, then the numbers just increased and increased.
Ultimately, the marches ended on March 14th, 1968, without a fair housing law for the city of Milwaukee. And then, less than a month later, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. That galvanized passage of the 1968 Civil Rights Act, it's also known as the Fair Housing Act, signed into law as a national ban on discrimination in housing. That happened thanks in large part to the publicity generated by the housing marches here in Milwaukee. After King's death, the NAACP Youth Council chose to honor him with a march through the inner city and downtown.
On Martin Luther King's death, I mean, I'll never forget it. I stood on the corner of 3rd and North Avenue after marching down Wisconsin Avenue. And I looked back towards Wisconsin Avenue, and the street was wall-to-wall people, wall-to-wall, of all colors.
People marched in silence, except for the occasional singing of We Shall Overcome. 3rd Street in Milwaukee is now MLK Boulevard. And after fighting against fair housing legislation, the Common Council renamed the 16th Street Bridge the James Grappi Unity Bridge. Anger can destroy or it can build. 50 years and a little bit of hindsight later, Prentice is able to see the manifestation of his work. For instance, now that African Americans can live in more districts, there's better representation on the Common Council. In theory, there's also better access to schools and public facilities. Of course, there's still a long way to go.
You turn around and you look and you say, what real difference did it make if Milwaukee was the most segregated city then, 50 years ago, and still is today? What real difference did it make? But when you look from a political standpoint, then you understand that there has been some progress. Don't give up.
I'm Aisha Turner, 89.7 WUWM. Special thank you to WTMJ-TV, the Wisconsin Historical Society, and the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee Libraries for the use of archive materials in this story.
Race and ethnicity reporting supported by The Doman Company.